This is CliffCentral.com.
All right, let's get into the burning platform with Justice Malala. Every Thursday we get a chance to check in with Justice and to find out what he thinks about all the things that are going on that week. We usually run out of time because there's so much to talk about, but this morning Justice is in Cape Town. Let's do this.
Burning platform, fired up by Nando's on CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, Mr. Malala. Last week KZN, this week the Cape. You are electioneering.
I'm trying to find that magic formula that you guys are talking about. What exactly does one do to move from being a child star to being an adult star? So, to your point, both Ben and Mabale, what exactly does the EFF have to do to move away from being that child who made so much trouble to being a party that doesn't always arrive in parliament, heckle Jacob Zuma, get kicked out by some nasty men in white shirts?
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. I don't know what they have to do, but they have said that they're not going to stop doing what they have been doing. I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
So there's no old lady with a cigarette stuck to her bottom lip then.
You know, Justice, you raise a good point, though, and I think a lot of people are asking this at the moment. Last week you said, and I think everybody agreed with you, we're really grateful, or I think it was 2 weeks ago, that the EFF exists, that they're there to remind the president that this is not just business as usual, and we can't just carry on as if everything's fine. You have a major, major credibility problem, Mr. President, and you've got to get out of here because none of us take you seriously anymore.
Yeah.
But then if they keep doing this time after time, eventually they start eroding their own credibility because they become just a nuisance.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, if you look at what happened in Parliament this week, so you had that those scenes of violence. You had school kids visiting Parliament in the public gallery, shrieking, and you know, and then you had the images going about, and then you had the woman MP who fainted a little bit later, the ANC MP. You had all these things going on, and at any other time, anywhere else in the world, and in South Africa, a month ago, all that stuff would have been not just on the front pages, it would have been the lead story. By the afternoon of that day, that story was number three or number four. I'm not sure where Mabale put it the next morning, but it wasn't the top story. It was almost like, ho-hum, we know what happened. Mm-hmm. It's exactly like what happened, you know, earlier this year. It's exactly like what happened last year. It's exactly like what happened before that. And you start saying, what exactly is going on here? Is this tactic still relevant to the situation? I think at some point we have to say, what is the institution that is Parliament going through now? Can it withstand the scenes that it's seeing? So the onus really is not just on the EFF. My view is that the onus is on both sides. What is the ANC saying when, you know, just last week, Jacob Zuma, the president of South Africa, was addressing an empty parliament? There was not just the EFF. Everyone else had left. Let's not forget, again, that COPE left even before everyone else. And the last time this happened at the last Q&A session, everyone else left. And so the ANC was left on its own. And I think there needs to be a conversation about responsibility on both ends. The ANC needs to take some responsibility about the fact that its president has brought shame to the chamber. The fact that the president has, you know, I mean, the last time he was in that parliament, he said, I removed Nhlanhla Nene because I wanted to give him a job at the BRICS Bank. Well, as they say, Dololo, where is the BRICS Bank job? It's not there. And so, you know, this is a president whose relationship with Parliament has been found by the Constitutional Court to not have been healthy. Parliament didn't hold him to account. So I think we need a bigger, more rounded conversation about, do we, at this rate, Parliament will not be the respected institution that it will be. It will not be an institution where ordinary people say, this thing was discussed in Parliament, it must be important. Secondly, it will be those jokes that are busy fighting each other, beating each other up. That is.
Flax, try and get Justice back in a better line. We lost him there for a second. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, so far, I completely agree with Justice. Like, how do we keep Parliament up high on the national agenda when it's become a joke, where it's become like theatre? And we were joking about this yesterday, and we do often, that, you know, now suddenly people are watching Parliament, but they're not watching it because they care about the content. They're watching it because they're hoping for a fight, someone to throw a water bottle, someone to pass out, Baleka to start crying. It's kind of like watching a soap opera.
Well, yeah. Do we have Justice back?
Yeah, we got him back. But okay. Go on, what did you want to say?
No, it's fine. Let him continue.
Sure? All right. Justice, we got you back on the phone. The Skype line just died out on us.
I'm sorry about that. I didn't know what happened.
Not a problem.
Yeah, so I just think, you know, at some point we need to talk about what is the legacy for this parliament? What do we want it to be in 5 years and 10 years? It can't continue to be what it is. And something has to give. And I think at some point, concerned leaders should say, what are we doing here? Now, the big problem is, who are the concerned leaders? Who's going to step up and say, you've now got to protect this institution because it is it really achieving what it needs to do? This is where people get the ultimate consideration from their representatives. And right now, they're not getting it. They're getting a president who doesn't answer questions, and they're getting an opposition that is just there to showboat and leave. And quite frankly, there are no solutions coming through. So we need a bit of that to come through now.
And Justice, the other problem is we've got a finance minister who's crying out for help. It's not just Parliament. Parliament crying out for credibility and for a restoration of some sort of dignity. But we're looking at a finance minister who's appealing to the public to protect him and the Treasury from these very nefarious forces that he won't name, but we know who they are, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is you know, if we had Anthea in the studio, I mean, the big question for me about the finance minister, the private garden story, is what happens next? What goes up in this next iteration? I think you know, that statement by the finance minister was incredible. What you've just said is incredible, that the finance minister doesn't turn around to his cabinet, doesn't turn around to the person who appointed him, the president. Mm-hmm. He's appealing now to you and me and Ben and Michael and Mabale and saying, guys, help me. Because the people I'm working with essentially don't want me out. That's what that statement says, that I am under so much pressure. My family is under so much pressure. But the people who work at Treasury, who do all this important work, they're under pressure and someone has to help me. And I don't think the people I work with can or want to help me. And we can see why he would do that, because if you think about what President Zuma did on Friday when he went to the ANC National General Council, he said, yeah, I was vilified for appointing the best finance minister you can have. So,
And he meant Des van Rooyen.
Yes. So if you're in the job and we keep saying, you know, the best accountant we've got, and we don't mean the accountant in our business, what's the accountant in our business going to think? What is passing to make of President Zuma, not once, not twice, but three times at least now, saying, oh, this was the best guy? So he doesn't have cover in the cabinet. He doesn't have the ear of the president. In fact, one would say, whenever it's convenient and all these hawks issues, South issues come up, President Zuma is very quick to say, you know what? The institutions have to do their own work, and I'll do my own work. And so I'll leave you out hanging. And that's a big problem. But what happens now? What if Anthea were to ask us, what is going to happen next? Because every time this sort of thing happens, think about it. The rent to the pound went from about 20 to 22, whatever. So every time President Zuma and his supporters, saying the Hawks or the South and so forth, do something like this around the finance ministry and national treasury, people lose money. Pensioners lose money. You will remember that the head of the PIC went to Parliament about a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, and said that they lost an incredible, was it 95 billion rand in the week of Nanogate?
Yeah.
That is the kind of thing that happens. So people might think, oh, you know, it's politics or not. Whenever it happens, the pension you've been putting away loses money. It means that when you reach your pension, your money is gone.
But you see, Justice, I think this is something a lot of people don't realize, because everybody imagines that when we say that 500 billion was wiped off the country's balance sheet, that that's a problem for, you know, for traders and for rich people and for stock markets and people who own a lot of shares. But it actually hits everybody. It hits the poor probably harder than anyone else, because it means that their money is worth a half of what it was a year before.
Exactly. And you know what? If that continues, then that money is going to be zero. There will be no money. The currency will depreciate. And you will draw that money, and you don't be able to buy anything if you can get it. So this is serious for the ordinary man and woman who's chipping away, working away, hoping that, oh, you know, I will retire and I will be able to, I won't be a burden on my kids. What it means is that some among us are going to retire, and we're going to be turning around to our kids and saying, support me, because my pension has been blown by Nanogate, Parvin Gate, every scandal that comes along around the finance ministry. So what next in this saga? I think it is clear now that Parvin Gordhan is on his own. Over the past few days, you've had a narrative that says that, and I interviewed Lindy Wezulu, the small business minister, this week, and she said outright that, you know, the people at National Treasury need to know that we want transformation, that we need transformation in this economy. What does that mean exactly? Where is that coming from? And I think it's coming from essentially a story that says these guys are against transformation. We want to change things around here, and they are stopping us, meaning the people at Treasury.
Yeah, but this is also what happens when you're stuck between a rock and a hard place and you can't offer the electorate anything new, which is where the ANC old guard
are. That's the card you pull out, because it's a very convenient, very easy card to pull out. So over the next few weeks, if anyone out there like Anthea is listening and wants to know how this is going to play out, you're going to see more and more and more of those kind of utterances. Oh, no, these guys are anti-transformation. These guys are this. These guys are not doing this. They should do this. Why aren't they doing this? And so forth and so forth. And after a while, Parvin Gordhan is becoming more and more and more tired. His family has been saying to him, you know what? Why are you doing this to yourself? Just resign and leave. And the pressure is going to mount and mount, and Benning in Tlemesa, that's the guy who was found by the Pretoria High Court to have lied under oath, will stand there and say, come on, man, why don't you just leave this and then we will stop those charges against you? And then in the middle of that narrative, you will start hearing a narrative that says, oh, there are many, many people who can do this job just as well. Not Des van Rooyen. Oh, maybe Brian Molefe at ESCOM, maybe you could be finance minister. And then you'll hear that story saying, there are more people like that. We can do that. I think we're now seeing probably the exit strategy that has been mapped out for Parvin Gordhan. And I think that Parvin Gordhan should be careful. So I'm not saying this is definite, but I think that very soon he will find himself under even more pressure, and he will have to resign for his own health, for his own family's sake. And you will see Brian Melosa, possibly the new MP who was sworn in very lately.
Why don't we just give Atul Gupta the job and be done with it?
It is, by the way, worth noting that the story about a possible Brian Melosa finance ministry seems to have emanated from the Gupta family. Pravin Gordhan has intimated as much. So it's that's the narrative of the finance ministry. It's not edifying. It doesn't inspire hope. And once again, we have to ask the question that the DGs were asking this past weekend in their letter about who runs this country. Mm-hmm. Is it sex and wars, or is it the union building?
Well, it, seem, it
all
seems
these
clear.
Keep on emanating.
It seems that the real intel is held by a family who are partly in Dubai and partly here. And talking about that family, I see, by the way, the SACP have just hit out at the Hawks bus over Pravin Gordhan. That's the latest headline there. I've also seen that government has missed the deadline on the nuclear plan, the court deadline. So Tina Jumaat-Peterson has got to pull her socks up there as well. But most importantly, our friend Richard Mdluli seems to be angling for the top cop job again.
You have to love it, huh? You'll remember what Richard Mdluli was accused of. He was accused of quite a crime of allegedly getting rid of a love rival and has many other quite, shall we say, colorful allegations against him.
Right.
And that one of them remains that he is someone who has been very helpful in President Zuma's political career. And many have wondered where the spy tapes and the tapes that had Leonard McCarthy in conversation with Asimbulela Nyunka came from, and many have said, look no further, that might be where they emanate from. Now, if that is the person who is now angling for the top job and might get it, you know, you have to ask yourself, what happened to the war on crime? What happened to the fight against the crime that we no longer talk about? Because it's just become, oh, you can talk about crime, you can moan and whine about it, but nothing's going to happen, nothing's going to stop. So we've reached a stage now where it's sort of, you know. And so you enter Richard Mdluli, and will that be solved? No, I don't think so. I think it will be something else altogether.
Well, this is all part of the fight back from the president. I mean, this is him fighting for his political survival. And he's deploying every weapon he can, whether it's the Guptas, whether it's rumors, whether it's Richard Mdluli, whether it's Pravin Gordhan.
The Meza, the Hawks.
Yeah, I mean, all of this is just part of him trying to stay there, right?
It is indeed. And I think that, you know, he's certainly scaring a lot of people. But if you think about it, you now have Benning and Meza, the Hawks, and you have Richard Mdluli as the top cop. What are you saying? What message are you sending when you appoint all these people? Remember that in the provincial setup, you've got the Mpumalanga police commissioner, his surname is Zuma, no relation to the president. Mm-hmm. He also had very, very serious allegations leveled against him. He ran away from a cop. He's the person who allegedly tried to, and I don't think it's been denied, tried to run away from cops and got into someone's house and locked himself in a toilet. So you have all these really quite flavorsome police people at the top of the regime. What are you saying to the 157,000 other cops who will be below them? You're saying, you know what, don't arrest the bad guys. Do the political bidding and you will become tops. Don't try to be the kind of cop that young girls and boys run around saying, I want to be a policeman in the future. It's not like that at all. So, I mean, I think this chips away at the public's trust of authority. It says, why should you be upstanding and honest? Why should you say, I won't lie, when liars get the top jobs in the service? And I think that's a big problem for all of us.
Well, there's one other thing we've got to talk about. Robert McBride, Anwar Dramat, and Ivan Pillay, and this is related, obviously, vow to fight manipulating of state institutions. Now, that's an interesting little trio, that, Robert McBride, Anwar Dramat, and Ivan Pillay. Tell me about them.
It's very interesting. I think, first look at Anwar Dramat. Anwar Dramat was an MK operative. He was arrested. He was famously tortured by one of the apartheid government's big Western Cape torturers. He suffered hugely. He is someone who is, without doubt, committed to the fight for freedom, was very committed to the ANC. And so when the Scorpions were dismantled and the Hawks came in, he was the person tapped to run that unit, and he went there and he did it. Then he started investigating people in organized crime close to some very powerful people connected to some very powerful people in the highest office in the land.
Okay.
And what happened to him? An investigation was found, and he's now out of the Hawks, and they are still investigations hanging over him, and like Pravin Gordhan, like others, he might be arrested and stand trial for renditioning suspects to Zimbabwe. That is the allegation. Think about Ivan Pillay itself. Same thing. You know, over the past 20 years, he's been working itself, set up that that unit that is now known as the Rogue Unit. But all along, it was, this guy is fantastic. Also comes from an intelligence background, also worked under Jacob Zuma in the MK, and committed to South Africa. What happened? SARS begins investigating some people very close to the highest office in the land. And what happened? He is now, like Pravin Gordhan, being investigated, might be investigated, has a massive cloud hanging over him, and oops, he's also lost his job at SARS. Think about Robert McBride. If there are people who hated MK in this country, it was Robert McBride. Many people will remember the Magoo's Bar bomb in KZN in 1986. This is a guy who was MK through and through, who cannot be questioned about his commitment to the ANC. New South Africa comes along, does a whole bunch of things, ends up at ICIS. What is ICIS's job? To investigate dirty cops. The minute he starts investigating some people connected to the highest office in the land, what happens? He's accused of doctoring this or that report, and now he also has been suspended by the police minister. And by the way, that suspension was found by the Johannesburg High Court to being unconstitutional. It was Minister of Police. You can't touch this guy. Parliament has to touch this guy if you want to get rid of him. But what has the minister done? He's done it anyway. So it seems to me when these three men stand up and say, we have to do something, because it seems to us the minute you investigate some powerful people, you're out.
Yeah. Well, Justice, who's gonna win this game? I mean, it seems to me like it's a war of attrition, and the only ones who really are losing are South Africa. We're all losing. The economy's losing. Poor people are losing. But this is a fight to the death for the president, because what's waiting on the other side for him, you know, he's got a lot to lose. He's got prison waiting for him if any of this goes down the way that that it might, in the worst possible way for him. And the best case scenario for him is he flexes enough muscle to be able to keep control of everything for a little bit longer. But who will win eventually?
The people will win. The people will win, Gareth. It's whether people realize that like Jacob Zuma, this is a long game. It's not a short game. We're going to have this war of attrition, as you call it, going on for quite a while longer. It's going to be full of unpredictability, of uncertainty, of schizophrenia. We are set for a long winter of discontent because President Zuma is not going to give up very easily. And the institutions and the people in many of these institutions which are being captured are going to fight back, scared themselves, but I think they're going to fight back. And the people will win. It's inevitable that they will win. They will win, but it's not going to be easy, and it's not going to be short. It's going to be a very long, long game, and it's going to scare us a lot along the way.
And who can we rely on in these sort of situations? I mean, who's there to defend the public? We've got Thuli Madonsela, who's leaving office soon. Her term expires in a couple of months' time. We've got Pravin running the Treasury, trying to keep the economy going, trying to stop us from sliding into junk status. But who do we really have to rely on? I mean, Zweli Mkhize's name comes up quite often as somebody who might be able to talk some sense in the highest circles. People like Cyril, can we rely on Cyril? Can we rely on Nkosi Sana Dlamini Zuma?
I think many of the names you mentioned are compromised. And I think also they I think we must acknowledge that the idea of a messiah is becoming more and more. I think we're going to need more of a citizens' movement. I think what we are seeing with the feedback wall, what we are seeing with these movements that are popping up in interesting places, what we are seeing with people standing up and saying, like the DGs over the weekend saying, you know, not in our name, what's going on here? I think you're going to see more of those. The point about them is that they are not coordinated. They don't have a leadership. They don't like each other even. But I think increasingly you will see those come up. I think also, I think it was Oliver Tambo who said the people are never wrong. But the people are going to show the leaders we have some interesting things in these local elections. I'm convinced now that the ANC is going to get a clap in Nelson Mandela Bay and possibly in Tshwane. And I think that is going to send a very powerful message that you can't toy with these institutions. And so the fire is going to be put under the ANC to do something, to act, to do something meaningful, because it is the ANC that is now losing. And I think the ANC realizes that this society is too complex, complicated, open for an election to be stolen properly. And so it has to keep its legitimacy up or see itself out of play totally. So I think in fact it will come from within. I think Cyril Ramaphosa has missed his moment to be that messiah. I think Nkosi Dlamini Zuma is never going to be that messiah because she hasn't made it part of her culture to stand up to the big man. She didn't stand up at all on Zimbabwe or AIDS. I don't think Zweli Mkhize has shown any inclination towards that. He remains an insider player, and so we'll try to find a way to make a Zuma exit palatable to the party inside. And so I don't think it's going to come from there. I think it's going to come from outside, from citizens showing a little bit more complicated patterns and activism over the next few years, and that may force the ANC, the ANC that walked into Parliament in 1994 and said such amazing things and made that his decision take. Maybe that will bring back that ANC.
But in the meantime, we should be grateful for the EFF's effort in Parliament, even if they are disruptive.
Yeah, I think we need accountability, and who is going to demand it if it's not people like the EFF, and they're doing it. Quite frankly, if the EFF wasn't there yesterday, it would have been a walkover. The president would have walked in. There'd have been some very civilized questions, old boy. And then it could have been, it's all happy, happy.
You can see that the president is under some pressure. If you saw him in Parliament, getting very hot under the collar with Musi Maimane while he was talking about Nkandla. I think it was either yesterday or the day before. And you could you could see this man is under pressure. You can see he's definitely feeling the heat.
Yeah, the thing with Jacob Zuma is that he feels the heat and then he goes on and does the next outrageous thing. Think about what he said at the ANC NGC. This is a man who's been under pressure just a few weeks ago, 2 weeks ago in Parliament. So I think if one is to say President Zuma needs to account to all of us, I think that pressure needs to remain sustained to the extent that he realizes that he can't keep on pretending to be responsive and not being responsive in deed and just being responsive in sort of, I'll do it, but really I don't believe in it.
Right. Okay, well, Justice, that's a lot to cover today. There was a question. This is from someone called Jack. He said, could I ask Justice a question on the show today? What is going on with our universities, the higher education? We have UJ in burning ruin, a highly respected Prof. Jonathan Janssen stepping down and going off to Stanford, and a scandalous political interference in the programming at Durban International Film Festival by the UKZN Deputy Vice Chancellor Prof. Potgieter. The credibility of academic independence is slipping away. Is this a reflection of our current government, bureaucratic interference, power hungry? I'd love to hear what Justice thinks of this. Thank you and regards, Jack.
I think it's a very, very important question. I think it's a question that goes to the heart. One of the things about the struggle that's going on in universities, it's not just the fees, it's not just about stability on those campuses. It's also about the ability to allow people to think, to be critical, to go places where normally we wouldn't go, to research things that we would, many of us would say, oops, what is that? What is going on there? And I think there is, it's absolutely crucial that continue, that academic freedom continue to be allowed. And I think a lot of the legislation that has been brought about by Dr. Bladen Zimande aims to curb some of that. It wants to make academia kowtow to state. And if we allow that, then we're going to have people in a department in Pretoria somewhere telling people what to think and what to research and how to conduct universities. And my view is that you don't want universities like that. This stuff matters because right now the rankings of South African universities continue to decline, whereas there was a time when they were beginning to flower, and places like the University of Cape Town were seen as being places that had an amazing, incredible future and where lots of international students wanted to come. We need to maintain that while transforming, of course, these institutions to allow more black people in and so forth and so forth. But I think that there is something insidious happening at our universities. I also think we need to take more responsibility. I think the law enforcement agencies, what are they doing to find the people who bombed that auditorium at UJ? I think, it's not just about protecting the idea of academic freedom, it's also making sure that people who do these terrible things are brought to book. And so I'm distressed that, you know, we don't seem to arrest enough people. And I hope what happened at Vuani, for example, is, will bring about, we'll see justice happen there and people actually brought to book. So this issue that has been brought up is a big issue. Maybe what we need is to get Dr. Bladen demanded to come talk to these things, because one of the things that we don't talk about enough is that the Fish Must Fall movement, for all the kudos that people like me have said, have given it, academic funding also has a big impact on academic freedom and the ability to question and say and find things in academia. If universities are going to rely on the state largely for their funding, then we might have a problem, because the state starts dictating things and the academics are scared of getting their funding lost. And so that's the end of it. It's absolutely key that if Mabale went to VET, then Mabale gives a bit of money to VET, and that allows the academics there to do work that government wouldn't sometimes allow.
Justice?
I lost you there. I think it's an absolutely key issue to debate and to continue to talk about, because I think it's also gone to the margin. But I think our universities are not in a good place at all. And I think the loss of Professor Jonathan Janssen is huge. It's humongous. Sure, we'll find someone else. But to lose a brain like that, an amazing human spirit like that. I mean, I don't know if you guys have met Jonathan Janssen, but I want to clone that man. I want to marry him. I want to do all kinds. I mean, he is incredible. Well, an amazing brain, an amazing human being.
You've never met, and I don't think it's possible that there's anyone in South Africa who cares more about education than he does. He has met teachers from the smallest little township schools to the biggest, most high-profile university lecturers who are professors seven times over, and he manages to infuse in all of them and in their students an incredible love for education. The man clearly cares about that. I don't begrudge him the opportunity to go to Stanford. I think that that's a tremendous opportunity for him and for his family, and you know, someone like that needs to constantly be pushing the limits of their own knowledge. But I feel it's a huge loss to us.
No, it's a massive loss. The man is exemplary and he's outstanding, and it's a massive loss for this country. And we need him. We need him hugely. So I hope he'll come back one day.
Thank you, Justice. We will chat to you next week, Thursday.
And I'll be in studio.
Very, very good.
Absolute pleasure. Cheers, guys.
All right, there we go. Justice Malala and the Burning Platform on cliffcentral.com. You can get all of that. If you missed a single part of it, you can listen to the whole thing. It'll be on podcast very, very shortly. And you can also listen back to previous episodes to hear how this conversation started all those months ago and how much we've moved either to the right side or the wrong side, depending on where the country is at any given time. But it's always interesting to analyze it with Justice Malala. The Burning Platform, brought to you by Nando's. Make sure that you keep cliffcentral.com on every Thursday so that you don't miss out on the next installment.
Burning Platform, fired up by Nando's on cliffcentral.com.